Hi, everyone. Just a reminder that this show is not legal advice, trading advice, financial advice, or personal advice. Enjoy the show, and thank you very much. Yo, yo, welcome to Crypto 101. This is Matthew Aaron. And one of the most important use cases or utilities of blockchain technology, in my opinion, is democracy on the blockchain. Getting the power to vote into people's hands so they can vote securely, instantly, and it's cheap for taxpayers. Today's guest, we have Jamie Skella of Horizon State. He has an Australian company that is doing just that. He's making solutions for democracy. Now, we've covered this on this podcast before when we had a conversation with Boule, who is also doing democracy on the blockchain. But we said, this is so important. We have to keep highlighting it and have to keep promoting and educating on the importance of putting the power of the vote in your hand. So listen to this interview with Jamie Skella of Horizon State. But before that, please, check out crypto101podcast.com. That's crypto101podcast.com. There you can find links to our social media. You can find ways to contact us to say what's up, give suggestions. And you also can find our Patreon page where you can donate to help us run the servers, maintain our website, and so on. And lastly, you can find the link to the iTunes subscription page. Subscribe to our podcast and leave us a comment and a rating. It really helps us stand out. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you after the show.
Hello, Matt, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good. Then, how do I turn it around? Let's have a look. See.
We're making we're making companies on blockchain, and Skype technology is still.
I actually don't use Skype very often. I pretty much use Skype for these sorts of things, and that's about it.
You know, nobody uses Skype very often. Are you drinking a beer?
It's actually a cider. It's a really, really nice cloudy cider from Tasmania, island off the south of Australia.
Oh, right on, man. I could totally go for a beer. Partaked a little bit too much last night, but...
It's the season, you know, and there's just Christmas parties left, right, and center, and I had a...
You said you're going to a barbecue after this, right?
I've actually just arrived at the barbecue place. I said I need to borrow a spare room that's quiet. So I'm at my friend's place at the moment, and I've got a barbecue now, and then off to a wedding party after that.
Can I put this in the interview?
Go for it.
Right on, man, because I really like when people, like, know who they're talking to. Like, I think, like, some of these people in the blockchain world, that they really get, you know, blown up where, like, there's almost superstar status, and it's like, these are dudes. These are real people. Like, we like drinking beer.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Wow, you're just a normal guy. It's like, yeah, man, we're all just people, you know. it's pretty funny.
Right on, man. Right on. Well, anyway, thank you very much for coming on Crypto 101, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your day and your barbecue for talking to us.
Pleasure, man. No worries.
If you don't mind, we could just go straight into it. And could you please just tell everybody a little bit about yourself, who you are, and yeah.
Sure. Well, name is Jamie Skella, co-founder of Horizon State. I've been in the sort of crypto space now for probably 3 or 4 years, all in all. It initially started with an interest in Ethereum, primarily because of its programmable nature. It was far more interesting to me than Bitcoin, primarily because of the sorts of opportunities that it presented in respect to actually creating brand new business models and ultimately sort of reshaping the way our world works in some pretty profound ways. You know, far beyond merely finance, it was more significant than that thanks to the power of these smart contracts. About 2 years ago, I got to work with MyVote, and that's sort of where the tech that Horizon State uses sort of came to be. My Vote is a not-for-profit democratic movement. Some pretty large ambition to reshape the way we govern ourselves and do it more effectively and sort of return some power to the people. And out of that, we saw a need to try and deliver a way to engage constituencies, such as the Australian population, with immediacy and frequency and regularity. So, of course, postal votes and paper ballots are expensive and they're timely to set up. Because of the research that I've been doing in blockchain at the time, it was a bit of a no-brainer. It was clear we needed to try and repurpose this distributed ledger and its transaction to represent votes. And that sort of led us to where we are today with our recently closed token sale and some of the great work we're doing as we work towards commercialization and some pretty big deals next year.
Off topic question, is Skella your real name?
It is, but it's kind of a made-up name. So
that's the coolest last name ever.
Yeah, I get some interesting comments. People think it's like, wow, man, it sounds like a really cool skater name or something like that.
Right.
But my grandpa fled Europe during the time of World War II. As far as we understand, he was a turncoat. He was an intelligence officer. He spoke 7 languages. And after the war was beginning to wrap up, he fled to Australia and made up this last name. And so we actually really don't know much about our family history.
Right on.
Interestingly, he is the end of the line so far as the information we have. I'm one of like 2 skellers in the world because it's not a real name.
Wow, that's interesting. That's super interesting, man. So going back to Horizon State and you, what were you doing before you started Horizon State? And first of all, congratulations on the company. And also, can you tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do with Horizon State?
Yeah. So I mean, in terms of before Horizon State, I guess if you were to try and put me into a box or two, I guess I'm most commonly called a strategist or a technology strategist or even a foresight strategist. I do a lot of work in emerging technology and trying to design interfaces and technologies and products that take advantage of that emerging technology in ways that I believe are going to create the best future for us, as a culture, as a society. I guess I've spent largely the last 20 years doing those sorts of things. I got my start sort of when I was 13. Our parents finally bought me a computer. I really wanted it just to play Quake on. But then I sort of stumbled across this thing called the internet, and this blew my mind. being able to like send a text message across this computer to a friend suburbs away at the time and being able to dial into each other's modems and create these connections and create content and publish it instantly for the world to see. This was revolutionary stuff for me, and I fell in love, and that love has never really died. Since then, head of user experience at the AFL, which is the Australian Football League. It's kind of like our equivalent of the NFL, but very different sports. Head of UX at a company called Tats Group, working on lotteries and wagering products. Not my favorite industry, but a lot of great experience. And I've also dabbled in startups as well. I mean, my first work, so to speak, was in fact business I started called Pantheon Events, which was an esports event management business. About 10 years too early for that. If I'd started it now, it would have been much more successful with that industry taking off in a big way. I'm part owner in a bar called GGEZ, which is an esports bar. I co-founded a startup called Contact Light, working on some out-of-home advertising technology and a really cool transit application, which has been featured by Apple 7 or 8 times. Pretty varied. People
pretty busy,
look at
it sounds.
What I've done in the people look at what I've done in the past and they go, wow, it's kind of random. But for me, it's just always been about the future. About what technology is around the corner and what opportunities that presents for us to take advantage of. Now, Horizon State itself, to put it in a nutshell, we're utilizing distributed ledger technology or blockchain technology to create an unhackable ballot box, a tamper-proof ballot box.
Okay.
And this has some pretty wide and far-reaching implications in that, people generally, the connotations when you talk about a ballot box immediately go to electoral processes and, voting in elections. But democratic processes where you vote or there is something akin to a vote taking place is actually quite dynamic and varied, and it extends far into enterprise as well. So we are deeply engaged with a few high-profile multinational enterprise opportunities where our technology is going to be used for things such as membership engagement, 5-10 million members around the world for various purposes, or indeed we are looking at AGMs and shareholder voting. And so it's not just about elections, but obviously...
AGMs?
What's that?
AGMs, you said?
Annual general meetings. So, businessy type process stuff. Wherever some sort of opinion is solicited or a vote needs to be cast, where the topic is sensitive and you want to provide accountability and transparency, ultimately delivering trust and confidence to the people that are casting that opinion or that vote. It's a big deal, and it's a great application for this kind of tech.
It's very interesting that you went from, and I understand what you're saying, is like you look at new technology and you see where you can implement it. From your varied background to democracy, what is your inspiration for making this kind of platform opposed to, say, a currency or a supply chain?
I started working with the founder of MyVote about two-ish years ago. Well, I was actually introduced to him for a completely different matter. He was an executive at a Melbourne education institution, you know, towards the southeast of Australia. And I was actually looking at selling in some of this technology that I was working on previously into this education institution. It was about having students be able to interact with screens in their environment just by being in proximity. You know, no need for QR codes or NFC or scanning or tapping or any of that sort of stuff. And he was working in the background quite quietly at that moment on something called MyVote, which was sort of, you know, this democratic movement, which I described earlier in a nutshell. And a lot of the things that underpinned this movement from a philosophical perspective, the things that resonated with me, because thinking about my childhood growing up in a relatively low socioeconomic geographic here in Australia, I was really, really disconnected from the political landscape. And so all my friends and family. And the only reason that you really went to vote was because if you didn't, you got a fine, because voting is compulsory here in Australia. And so there was a very low awareness or understanding of what was going on in regards to policy. Too often we were voting for personalities or parties rather than the policies that underpinned their campaigns. You know, you're really only voting once every few years, which I believed was far too infrequent. Mm-hmm. And then when you vote, it's really the decision between sort of, in Australia at least, one of the two major parties. It's effectively a two-party system.
Right.
And you have to take all of their policies. And there are some good policies and there are some bad policies with each. And it never made sense to me that I sort of had to pick between two sets of policies when, in fact, I had strong opinions on the specific policies.
Right.
And my vote represented a way to potentially change this. So I sort of got brought on board as the sort of user experience and the technology guy to think about what the membership experience would look like and how we're going to pull off this online voting stuff, which is sort of where blockchain came into the picture.
We have a huge Australian following on this podcast, and that was part of the inspiration of you coming on this show. Some of the listeners reached out and was like, you got to get this guy. What is a outcome for Australia that you would like to see using your company, Horizon State? Politically, economically, how do you feel the people of Australia will be empowered and interact with that system?
So I think the simplest example of where we can provide benefit to the people, but also to the government as an existing institution, if you'd like to call them that, is, well, it's threefold. We improve efficiencies. The example I'll use is the recent same-sex marriage vote, which was non-binding, by the way, but it was a postal vote here in Australia, which ended up costing the taxpayer in the vicinity of $120 million.
Holy
it took
shit.
2.5 months to orchestrate. Yeah, it's like really expensive to send people pieces of paper.
Holy shit, that's crazy.
There's a lot of people involved in the process. There's a tremendous amount of planning and double handling and you know, these physical assets. Ultimately, what we sort of had was a glorified poll conducted by snail mail.
Mm-hmm.
And so utilizing Horizon State technology, we would have been able to cut down the time involved from about, you know, 2 to 3 months. And instead, that would look like a few weeks or really however long it took for the various teams to work on the information delivery through a digital platform. The cost would obviously be significantly less as well. So the cost to the taxpayers, instead of $120 million, you know, it'd be in the vicinity of $2 million. That includes everything, sunk costs.
Right.
Yeah, big difference. That includes everything, including sunk costs in relation to software development that has already happened, but also the blockchain transactions that would need to be paid for. And then, of course, they're sort of 10 to 15 fold increases. We're talking 10x across the board, but where things get, you know, staggeringly better, unprecedentedly better, is in respect to the security of the outcome. So we saw postal votes being delivered to the wrong places. We saw them left out in the rain. And when you think about what these mean in practicality, is that the system is very insecure. People are able to vote on someone else's behalf. Votes are either not counted or potentially miscounted. And so utilizing Horizon State technology, what we have is a perfectly secure solution where the vote cannot be tampered with. The result is set in stone. It's transparent. It's there for everybody to see. It can't be changed. So it's pretty profound. It's the first time in history that we've had the opportunity to conduct ourselves in this manner.
Let me frame this question a little bit before I ask it. There's a lot of information right now everywhere on Facebook, social media. You know, there's competition to get as much information into people's hands. And honestly, people, in my opinion, are just getting overloaded by the sheer amount and then cannot decipher which one's real and which one's not real when it comes to information. Is this system of getting the votes to people faster and more and people being able to vote more, is that just too much information maybe for people?
Yeah, look, it's a terrific question, and I don't think it's asked enough. It's one of the questions that I don't get asked too frequently, but is actually really important, and the answer is just as important, obviously. But yes, when we're talking about a compulsory voting system, needing to vote per policy as those policy issues arise, it's not realistic. But I don't foresee a future where voting is compulsory, especially not as we are able to shift our democracies further towards a direct democracy model. It's not practical to have people consume the amount of information they need to consume and all the issues that come across the table. But what I think is really important is that we provide the opportunity for people to have their say on issues that affect them or their family or their community with more frequency and immediacy than what is possible now. And I think a really key facet of this equation is really about trying to establish higher qualities of outcome, not just more frequent outcomes. So the fact that we are now able to provide individuals the ability to vote on issues which affect them or their family or their community with immediacy and regularity doesn't necessarily mean that the quality of outcomes is going to be better. It doesn't necessarily mean that our democracy is going to be improved. There's a big piece of this puzzle, which is about how do we improve our democratic outcomes? Right. And this relates to the kinds of information that is delivered, what that information looks like, and how it's delivered. So if you look at, for example, the situation over in the United Kingdom with Brexit, that result was almost unarguably something that reflected a manipulation of the constituency. Mm-hmm. There was a tremendous amount of misinformation. There was party spin. Media influence had a part to play based on their ownership. Unfortunately, lies sort of created that outcome. And we need to get to a place where we're able to enable the constituency to have a say in a similar way to what they did with Brexit, but ensure that the information that they're given is far more objective and far less biased. And so using My Vote as an example, which is sort of where all this began, and they're using Horizon State's tech today, is that they have an international research team. They're from the left of politics. They're from the right. They're in, you know, China. They're US citizens. They're British citizens. And they collaborate on these information packs that go out before each and every vote to try and improve that quality of outcome and make sure that people have the opportunity to digest information, which is far better than what they'll see on Channel 7 News here in Australia or Fox News in the US or CNN or whatever it is. You know, mainstream news is typically not a good place to get information that you need to be basing important decisions on.
I know that we took this maybe to voting and democracies and governance a lot and very Australian centric, but maybe we can make this more global and more broad. What are some of the possible dangers of a Horizon State democracy on the blockchain?
Look, I think in respect to risks, it really ties back into the last answer, which was that with this technology comes the opportunity to enable communities to make decisions more rapidly. But are we improving the quality of those decisions? Mm-hmm. You know, technology is increasing in an exponential fashion. Each individual is empowered in brand new ways to affect themselves and their communities and ultimately the world. And the question really is, how do we ensure that our capability for quality decision making also becomes exponential along with that technology? Because we are racing towards a world where maybe in the not so distant future, you know, right now you can 3D print firearms and certainly there is no doubt that sometime into the future, you'll be able to 3D print a nuclear weapon. And when you have people, for example, that independently and individually can wield that kind of power, we need to work towards a future where we have also empowered people to make better decisions. And so the kind of technology that Horizon State is working on now, I think, is an important first step. later, you know, I think artificial intelligence, I think intelligence augmentation, these are going to be very, very important parts of our information future as well. It's going to be a very, very different world in sort of 50 and 60 and 70 years. And unless we can find ways to continually improve our decision-making processes and the quality of outcomes, we might be in a bit of trouble, I think.
What do you think of some of these other people that are trying to do the same thing on the blockchain that you're doing? A couple episodes ago, I think maybe last month, we were interviewing a company called Boolay, and they're doing something very similar to what you're doing. And the reason why that we're doing this again and having this conversation with you is you are a leader in this field, but it's such an important use case of the blockchain. How is Horizon State going to differentiate themselves from that, or do they need to?
So we're different in a few ways. When you think about Horizon State versus our competitors, ultimately the underlying fundamental mechanism for why we exist is that now there is an opportunity to utilize blockchain technology to secure the vote. And so whether it's Boolay or Follow My Vote or Votes Platform, all of these blockchain-oriented startups are utilizing the tech for that purpose. And so the difference really lies in a few areas. One is the team, one is commercial prospects, and three is the product. So some of these other teams don't actually have a working product yet, which puts us in a very different category to them. Some of them are brilliant technologists, more brilliant than me and anybody on our team, in fact, like really, really smart guys. But that's also not everything that's required to make a technology business successful. You know, I think I'm 33 and I think I'm the youngest on our team, but we've all got a tremendous amount of experience in technology design and experience in design. And importantly, commercial pursuits that involve huge government tenders that involve enterprise deals worth tens of millions of dollars. And so this sort of commercial nous and sort of business savviness is a really, really big deal. And generally speaking, I think a key difference in regards to product is that we aren't just a voting system. You know, this is about improving the quality of outcomes, and it's about an entire decision-making platform. So, you know, we have a fundraising mechanism for independents wanting to challenge for seats. We have an AI play coming into our field of vision, which we intend to start developing really soon and having ready for a 2019 feature launch. And we have some other really, really interesting angles as well, such as constituency incentivization. So we talked earlier about, is there too much information? Now, I think if we can start to throw away mandatory voting, and we can start to think about ways to encourage people to consume the information that is going to lead to better outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so if we think about these tremendously important information packs that MyVote puts together for their constituencies, the question is always, well, cool, you have some of the least biased and most objective information on the planet in regards to these matters. Kudos to you. How do you get people to read it? And up until now, there really hasn't been an obvious way to do that. You can encourage them to, but, you know, often encouragement isn't enough. We're all time poor. Everybody's busy, families and work. However, if you can start to incentivize people to consume better information, then all of a sudden, I think we're onto something. And that's quite a profound concept.
How do you incentivize a constituent?
Well, using this ecosystem. So HST is our primary sort of economic unit within our ecosystem.
Sorry.
The Horizon State token, or decision token, we call it. You're able to utilize our platform as a customer, such as a government or an institution, to actually not only encourage positively the people that are involved in the decision-making process to consume information, but indeed remunerate them using this currency.
Right.
So for the first time ever, we were able to ensure that people are consuming the right information to make better decisions, which is not only going to be better in outcome for them, but their entire staff or constituency of any kind.
You mentioned about your team. You're the youngest person on your team. You want to tell us a little about those guys and who's part of it?
So our CTO is Nemo Namani. He is Israeli in background. He currently lives in Wellington in New Zealand. He's a gun, really clever guy. He's our sort of tech genius so far as actual technology is concerned, writing the code. He has a great team of developers surrounding him, including Jason Theron. We've got Dan Crane, head of R&D. Dan, formerly chief online officer at an ASX 100 called Cats Group, which is also a company that previously worked at. So he has a tremendous amount of experience in businesses at scale. And he's a really, really clever technologist as well. He's been involved in blockchain for a long time now and continues to do significant and important research in regards to what is on the horizon, mind the pun, and how we might be able to utilize or benefit from that. We've got about 9 people in the team so far. And that's obviously going to continue to grow over the coming months and years. But it's solid. It's a really, really solid team.
mind, can I just move into more general opinions about the market, the current state of events in blockchain? What do you think about this whole Bitcoin rise?
I don't think anybody knows why this time. Everybody's looking closely at it and nobody has a good answer. Look, I think the fact that so many Bitcoin futures opportunities have just been announced is probably driving up the price, probably bringing in a whole lot of new external money. Obviously, the mainstream media continues to drive cryptocurrency in different ways, right, shapes and forms. I think it's a big deal for mainstream media at the moment because it seems to be getting ratings. Like it's getting the attention of the masses, even if the masses aren't proactively participating right now. But we're seeing that change. Look, I don't know why it has really skyrocketed so fast. You know, there are people out there talking about Tether and perhaps shady dealings in regards to that. That may or may not be true. I think some of the arguments proclaiming that it's kind of a scam, I think there's actually some credibility there, but I wouldn't want to go out and say that explicitly. It's hard to say. Look, I suspect we will see another crash sometime relatively soon, as demonstrated by most reputable and credible cryptocurrencies or crypto assets over the past 3 and 4 years. Everything continues to go up over time. So right, whether it's, you know, crashing 1 month compared to the last or crashing one day compared to the last, those willing to hold on to their investment for longer than very short periods of time are seeing tremendous benefits over the longer period. You know, if you bought Ethereum or Bitcoin this time last year, you would have experienced some tremendously scary ups and downs. I was on holiday with the wife over in Croatia when I saw my Ethereum portfolio drop 70% in about 12 hours.
Oh, man.
It's now exceeded the all-time high just right, recently. And, you know, again, it's dipped a little bit lower again. But the point is that overall, everything seems to be sort of continuing to go up. Now, of course, this isn't financial advice. I can't predict the future, but I personally have a lot of confidence that any credible currency or any credible crypto asset still has a bright near-term future.
Right, man. I was panicking when I saw that Ethereum 400 to, like, what was it, 90 US overnight. It was not yeah, normal. What do you think of Ethereum? Ethereum network is getting tested these days with this whole CryptoKitties thing. Do you have any insights on that?
Look, not specifically, other than a reality I'm sure we're all aware of, which is that blockchain in general, not just Ethereum right now, there are significant and important scaling problems that need to be solved.
Yes.
Thankfully, there are people way smarter than me that are working on solving them. I mean, Ethereum alone has a number of scaling technologies in the pipeline, Raiden, Sharding, Plasma, and we should start to see some of these implemented towards the end of 2018. Assuming we can solve these scaling issues, then we're really in a tremendous position to realize the potential for Ethereum, but also smart contract blockchains in general, and what that means for enterprise and business, and indeed disintermediation of existing institutions. Right now, there's a lot of treading water, and yes, right now there are a lot of hiccups, but I do think we're going to solve it. I don't think there's any question that we're going to solve these scaling issues. And in fact, depending on which blockchain we're talking about, some kind of already have in interesting and novel ways. In terms of public blockchains, programmable blockchains, something like Ethereum, I'm pretty sure that during 2019, that's going to be the breakout year for real-world applications on a large scale.
Mm. Why do you say that? Why 2019?
Well, I think that's realistically how long it's going to take for us to get the right scaling solutions in place.
Okay.
2018, I'm sure we'll see some go to testnet and maybe even see some of them deployed to the public blockchain towards the end of the year. But 2019 seems about right so far as a timing perspective. We'll be in a good position so far as the development and testing of those solutions.
You just mentioned about actively participating for the masses. The masses are now passively listening to the news and the media and knowing Bitcoin, they know the brand, but if you're involved, how would you actively participate?
So I've been writing the odd article, trying to help inform people about the opportunity from a blockchain perspective, talking about the crypto assets that relate to some of these blockchain startups, talking about how to purchase the assets that relate to those startups, as well as some of the coins, some of the currencies, you know, Ether, Bitcoin, Litecoin, these sorts of things. And I think it's really just about that understanding, because it's not particularly intuitive. And so the more people like you and I can do, this podcast is a great example of helping try to bring people up to speed, help them understand how things work, helping them understand how to get involved. I think the mainstream press drives the curiosity, and then anybody who's truly curious ends up jumping on how does Bitcoin work. And so as long as we continue to create relevant and well-tailored resources for people landing on those sorts of searches, then I think it's just a matter of time, and it's clearly beginning to accelerate already.
Is it just knowing and investing and holding as participatory and education, or do you think that people need to actually get out and try to implement like cryptocurrencies, people accepting Litecoin or what have you? Or what about like politicians, like using seeing something like Horizon State, should they be actively trying to get people to be democratic on the blockchain while taking Litecoin for their businesses?
So I think the way that we need to think about blockchain is in a similar way to how we think about TCP/IP, HTTPS, Linux, even the sort of operating system that runs so much of the internet from an operating system perspective. In that we don't really think about them. So we need to get to a place in time where blockchain is less of the buzzword and more of the important sort of architecture and infrastructure that support some of these sort of Web3 ideas. Now, in the meantime, obviously I would encourage everybody who has an interest to go off and spin up their own cryptocurrency or do a little bit of research on Solidity and what that programming language looks like. Do some research on blockchains in respect to cryptography. But we can't expect everybody to do this. And in fact, most people never will. And that's fine, because the rest of us who are working on it need to take this to a place where blockchain really kind of stops getting talked about. We'll know that blockchain is mainstream when we stop talking about mainstream, right? Mm. We'll know that blockchain is mainstream when we stop talking about blockchain.
Is that a good thing? I mean, we don't talk about tech anymore. I mean, that we take for granted. I don't know how the interwebs work. I don't know how my router in my house works. Like I have no clue. So when we stop talking about it, are we missing a great opportunity for blockchain and some of the utility that it could hold, even though it is mainstream?
Two of the cornerstones of technological progress are typically to make something cheaper and faster, and a third one is making it easier to use. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think it's realistic to have everybody fully appreciate how most of what they use day to day really works. But I would encourage them to. I think it's a real shame that people don't have a good understanding of how electricity works, considering it powers pretty much all of our modern lives. People generally don't have a good idea of how the plumbing works in their house, or where the storage ends up. There are so many things play such profound and important pieces of our lives. They deliver either information or they deliver hygiene, and all these things make us richer emotionally as well as actually. They make the world function as we know it, and yet people don't often have a good grasp about how this world has come to be. And I think in time, blockchain is just going to form another piece of that puzzle. And so I think people should take an interest and start to think critically about everything that makes up their life and how these things make their life what it is. But we just can't expect it. You know, it's just there are too many people, and we're too busy. But yeah, I mean, for people who have now just started, who are listening to this podcast, just going, you know what? Yeah, I don't know how the plumbing works, or I don't understand how my TV actually gets power. Go and Google it because it's fascinating. And in fact, the more you understand about how your world works, the higher propensity there is for you to become an ideas man. You know, it's understanding some of the fundamentals and going back to what Adam Jacoby from Livate describes frequently as first principles, peeling things back and getting down to some of the underlying information and workings. And all of a sudden, you start to have better ideas about how to improve the future with the knowledge of how things, you know, work now.
Who's somebody you look up to in the crypto space?
Naval, I believe his last name. In fact, I don't even know, because I got following him on Twitter. He's the founder of AngelList, which some of the listeners might know about. Naval Ravikant. Look, I'm going to butcher his last name, and I really don't want to. But if you go head to Twitter, it's at Naval, N-A-V-A-L. Naval is an incredibly smart and wise individual. I've never spoken to him directly or personally, but I've been following him for quite some time. He's shed light in some really interesting ways with some really profound perspectives on blockchain and technology and the world more broadly, I suppose, which sounds a bit odd. But if anybody's curious as to what I mean, definitely head along to Twitter, follow him, because I'm sure you'll get some real gems out of it.
I think I'm going to do that right now. I don't think I'm following him. If this was the first podcast, which it might be for especially some people in Australia right now, they might see your name and go, I'm listening to this podcast. Let's figure out this whole Bitcoin thing. What would you tell them about getting into the space? What would be the first thing you would want them to know if this was their first Bitcoin blockchain podcast?
Look, if they're listening to this from the perspective of cryptocurrency and speculative investments, I just want to reinforce that right now it is a speculator's market. Most of the organizations that are spinning up these tokens, building businesses around the blockchain, their business models haven't been fully realized. And whenever these utility tokens are created, utility is usually quite some time from maturity. So be aware that, yes, there is opportunity, there is money to be made. It doesn't necessarily mean you'll make it. There's a lot of risk involved, and any money that you're putting on the table, you should be willing to lose, and that's really important. From a blockchain perspective, if you're listening to this podcast from the perspective of a technologist or an entrepreneur, I think really, really the most important thing to consider right now is that most of the technologies and the opportunities that are being worked on right now are really just an improvement on the status quo. I want people to start thinking even further out of the box. When you think about the birth of any brand new technology, the internet or otherwise, what we typically start to do to begin with is start to look at the existing ways we work or the existing ways we socialize and effectively digitizing that. But it's not until normally quite a few years after that we start to think about brand new ways to do these kinds of things using this technology, which are right, cheaper or faster or more efficient. So I think there are some awesome, awesome blockchain businesses already coming to the fore, but I think the best is yet to be seen. And I'm hoping that maybe some of the people listening to this podcast are the catalyst for those awesome ideas.
That almost reminds me of the Henry Ford quote. If I asked people what they wanted, they would say faster horses.
I love that quote, but it's actually a misappropriation. So Henry Ford never actually said it, but there's some truth to it.
Oh, damn.
Although putting my user experience hat on, having spent a lot of time, you know, conducting user testing and running user groups and spending a lot of time in interaction design and user experience design, my argument to that quote is always that, well, you should have still asked, because there is a lot of really important insight to be garnered through those conversations with prospective or existing sort of customers or users. But yes, it's that kind of leap that I'm talking about, right? You know, there are simple ways to improve what already exists, and then there's rethinking problem entirely. And this, in fact, comes back to part of our earlier conversation, which is that people tend to sort of fall back to defaults and iterate very quickly now, based on our technological progress and the benefits that our tools enable. But iteration only gets you so far from what I call the local maxima, in that if you're only thinking about the problem or the potential improvement based on the last version of what you have, then it takes a long time to get somewhere different. Whereas if you start to go back and think about the problem, fundamentally what the problem is that sort of got this existing solution to where it is now, you can rethink that problem in brand new ways and get to very different conclusions based on the changed state of play in respect to technology or culture or society or geographic representation.
Well, I am blown away because I did not know that actually wasn't a Henry Ford quote.
The internet, now I think you're going to tell me so many misappropriated quotes.
Now you're going to probably tell me that the Gandhi quote, "Drink one for my homies," is also not from Gandhi.
I can't confirm or deny.
Jamie, I have one last question for you. But before I ask that question, I want to say thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day and your barbecue to come on and talk to us.
Look, I almost thought we should postpone this, because I was like, wow, I definitely had one or two too many scotches last night at the Christmas party. But look, I think we've gotten through it okay. If I've stumbled on any words, trust me, this is why. I encourage anybody listening to go off and have a listen to some of the other podcasts I've been on too. And, you know, there's a tone difference, I'm sure. But look, I think it's been a pretty awesome conversation. So thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And I also had a couple IPAs last night and maybe a couple more than I should have. And we're both trying to make it through the best we can. But I think you're right. We did a very good job. Last question. What three songs would you like with your interview?
So I did see your note about this, and I haven't had a good chance to think about it yet. Look, one of my favorite bands of all time is Radiohead, and some people will cringe and some people will celebrate that idea. I think one of their more recent songs, Burn the Witch, really, really awesome song. But I also have a pretty sort of diverse and eclectic taste in music. I like a lot of EDM. I like some classical as well. So I think, let me get back to you with the other two, because what I think would be cool would be to mix it up a little bit. We'll have some sort of modern alt rock, I suppose you could call it, in the form of Radiohead, and then maybe we'll throw in a cool dance track and maybe some electronic jazz as well. Something from Saint Germain. I'll get back to you.
All right. Right on, man. Well, anyway, thank you, Jamie, very much. And you enjoy your day.
Thanks, man.
All right, brother. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Crypto 101, and I hope that you enjoyed our conversation with Jamie. Before we go, the music today was by Radiohead, Burn the Witch, Justice, New Lands, and Saint Germain, Rose Rogue. And you can find the links to those songs in our description. And lastly, I want to give a shout out to ApogeeCrypto.com. That's Apogee, A-P-O-G-E-E, Crypto.com. They're the ones that helped me track down Jamie and hook up this interview. So I owe it to them to meet Jamie. Thank you very much, ApogeeCrypto.com. And furthermore, it's also the best place to check prices, real-time crypto prices. So if you're using CoinCap.com, CoinMarketCap.com, or any other place to check your crypto, check out ApogeeCrypto.com. The site looks dope, super functional, and it has so much more information than most of the other places. Thank you very much for listening. This is Matthew Aaron with Crypto 101.